It's really wonderful to be here. I thought a lot about the speakers we've had in the past several weeks. I've thought about Barbara Jeffries and Kim May, and I think about, you know, people like Bill and Barbara Vitale and all the wonderful people who speak. And I reflect on the fact that they all have these amazing degrees in spirituality, or they've studied science of mind for years and years, or they're ordained ministers, and I thought to myself, well, gosh, I don't have any of that. I haven't studied spirituality. I haven't received accreditation. So I don't take it lightly that I'm, up here, and I really appreciate the invitation. I have, you know, mostly my spirituality comes from experience over time. I remember when I was in college, I was given a great gift. I was a resident advisor. Does everyone know what that is? Basically, you have a dorm full of people and you have like hall monitors, basically. Someone who lives on the hall, who's like the traffic cop, who makes sure that the noise isn't too loud, etc. So I was one of those resident advisors. And we all were given special tasks. So someone had the task that they had to file all the noise complaints with the dean. And someone had the task that they had to, stay up and make sure that the noise was okay. And I was given this amazing task. I was told that there's a van out there, and if anyone in this dorm has a spiritual need or wants to go to a service off campus, you are responsible for taking them to that service. And so I, throughout my college years, got to go to many different religious services. And I got to go to Catholic services. I got to go to Protestant. I got to go to Jewish services. There were a couple of Muslim students. There were people that were, you know, back, I think they called it the Church of New Thought. And there was just a lot. And so I got to really have this amazing learning from a young age to think about spirituality in a different way, which I realized was a gift, because when I reflect on a lot of kids today or people growing up, they don't get that. They get, you know, ingrained in them, this is what you must believe from their families, and they don't get to experience that. So that was part of the beginning of my spiritual journey. And from then, I remember the first time I went to a Science of Mind church. I remember the first time I practiced yoga and meditation and realize that the body can contribute to your spirituality if you open your mind and your body and your heart, and it all kind of works together. So that's kind of my credentials that I bring here today, is that kind of the teaching that I had about having multiple different ways that I got to look at spirituality. So I really am grateful to speak to you. And you know that I always bring a movie component into every speech. And I thought about that a lot this past couple weeks too, because I thought, movies and spirituality, what does that have to do with each other? And so I gave some thought to that. And really, you know, movies are the perfect kind of microcosm of storytelling. Right? So storytelling is a way for all of us to kind of truly experience things and understand things that are happening. It helps enrich our knowledge and understanding of things, including our spiritual beings and identities, right? It's easy to say, be spiritual, or it's easy to say, love your neighbor, but it really comes to life when you use examples, when you can have stories that tell, that are enrich you and bring that to life. You know, I always used to say when I worked in corporate America to my staff, you can't have experienced every experience that there is to experience on the planet, right? You can't walk in everyone's shoes. You can't live in every culture. You can't, but you can listen to the stories of those of others that have had experiences that you haven't had. And that helps enrich you and bring you new things to your life. I remember when I worked and I had a woman during COVID, and we were having a regular catch-up one afternoon, and she was a single mother and she had two kids during COVID, and she was trying to teach them at home. She was trying to do her job. She called me one afternoon in tears, and I spent hours with her on the phone, just said, tell me all about it. I want to hear everything. And I always reflect on that moment as my biggest learning opportunity, better than any training class I ever went to, better than any lecture I ever listened to, was just knowing her experience. Because I didn't have kids. I didn't know what that was like. I didn't know her experience. But to hear that story let me live it and let me understand it. And it brought me, as you said, into a broader consciousness of being where I could be more empathetic, where I could be more understanding of what those things were like. So stories help us not only share our experiences, but it helps us to understand other people's experiences, which I think is so important, particularly in the world today, that we really grow our consciousness. So when I think about stories, you know, and I think about the great stories we've heard, you know, I reflect upon Kate Grayson talked about her experiences with Hurricane Helene. I thought about Bill when you gave the message at Christmas and you told us about the history of the stories of Christmas. That really came to life. And, it also helped me understand that, you know, the storytelling brought me to a higher range of consciousness. But I also realized that stories are all tinged with the perspective of the storyteller, right? So when you listen to a story, you have to understand that that is to enhance your consciousness. It's to give you a new perspective, but it's not meant to exclude other perspectives, right? It's meant to be a way for you to understand all different types of things. You know, I always remember that Christianity, in the early part of my life, I was told many times that I was going to hell for who I loved. And then one person came up to me and said, let me tell you something. Next time someone says that to you, I want you to remind them that in the book of Leviticus that they're referring to, there are 605 laws. So next time they refer to that one specific law demonizing you, you turn around and you say, how are you doing with those other 604 that are in the book of Leviticus? And so my point being that every time you hear a new passage, a new way of thought, a new law, it is for you to take in and to understand a new perspective. It's not meant to demonize one versus another. It's not meant to say, I'm right and you're wrong. It's meant to say, here's a spectrum of thought and ideas for us all to consider and respect other people's perspectives. So it is Hollywood's biggest night tonight. It is the Oscars tonight. And it will be a very different night for me than it has been in the past. But I reflected on, when I was thinking about storytelling, some of the movies that came out this year, and some of the stories that we hear, whether they're in movies, and by the way, when I say movies, you can replace that with books, music, spiritual beliefs, anything. Sometimes they teach you something new or open your eyes to something you haven't experienced before. And I reflect upon the movie Emilia Perez this year. Okay, so this was a movie that was a Spanish-themed transgender gangster musical. Not something that you typically see. But the message behind Emilia Perez, which really opened my eyes, was that the transformation that Emilia Perez made, while everyone focused on that it was a transgender transformation, really the heart of the movie was that she made a transformation internally. And it was in her internal transformation that was the truth of that movie, not necessarily her external one, which I loved. And when I realized that, I just went, wow, what a wonderful perspective. Then another movie, which was a big movie this year, A Complete Unknown, which was about Bob Dylan. And you watch that, and many of us, or many of you that have seen it, you reflect maybe on the past. You think about, oh, I remember where I was when I heard that song, or this brings me back to that memory. And a lot of times when you have these stories, they can bring you back to a time in your life. And sometimes that's a good point and sometimes it's a bad point, but it allows you to think about maybe things were different then. Maybe things were simpler. Maybe there were some things that I had back then in my life that I have not remembered. You know, and for me, I thought about the simpler times and maybe things could be simpler. So sometimes movies make us reflect and remember things that were meaningful that can be meaningful again. And then there are movies that really resonate, that really kind of hit you right there. And you go, yeah, that movie, someone else has experienced what I'm experiencing. And now, believe it or not, I had that reaction during the movie, The Substance. Does anyone see The Substance? Many people who saw that, their reaction was gross. That was a yucky movie. That was an interesting movie. It's about a woman played by Demi Moore, who is the odds-on favorite for Best Actress, by the way. And she has been in her career a long time. She's a fitness instructor, but her bosses at the television station where she does these on-screen programs tells her that she is getting too old and she is not, they want a younger, better, brighter version of her. She's outdated and past her prime. And so the movie turns into a little bit of this sci-fi type of thing where this someone offers her something called the substance, which will make her young and beautiful. And it comes with risks. But while I am no fitness instructor, and I'm certainly not Demi Moore, it did really hit home with me because I went through a similar experience where I had been at the top of my career, I had been really valued, and then I became outdated, and newer, fresher, younger models came along. So even though the story, even though I was not a fitness instructor, still the meaning behind the story really resonated. And I found myself, even though it has a little bit of a silly ending, I found myself really touched and crying during that because it really, I had that moment. So sometimes stories, again, think movies, books, even spiritual beliefs. Sometimes they hit close to home. Sometimes they remind you of past things, good or bad. And sometimes they give you this, wow, I never knew that before. I never experienced that. This is something I really want to learn about. But again, going back to my story about Leviticus, they're all meant to be a way to enhance us and not to demonize us. Now, I want to jump to my movie, which I really called this speech today, and I didn't have it because I didn't in my mind. I hadn't brought it together. But there was a movie in 2004 that many of you may remember. It was called The Notebook. Does anyone remember The Notebook? So The Notebook is not a Craig movie, by the way. It's not a Craig movie because it's a romance and I'm typically, you know, deep and dark and depressing. But the movie is, it's a perfect example for me of storytelling. It starts off with an elderly gentleman in a assisted living facility talking to this other patient. And he has a notebook where he's written down memorable points in life. And he's reading these to entertain this other resident. And of course, the movie goes on and, you find out more, but I started to really resonate on that. I thought, what would my notebook hold? If I was to stand up right now and read from my notebook, I'm giving you a couple stories, but what would I say in my notebook? And what would you say in your notebook? What would you write about that are the stories that are the ones that were meaningful? What are the stories that you have thought about? What are the stories that you may have created? What are the stories yet to come? Which is another really important point. Because when we think about storytelling, we think about a microcosm of past, present, and also future, about the things that Spirit has in store for us, what our purpose here is on this planet right now, and what we're meant to fulfill. So I invite you to think a little bit today about your notebooks and what they may have in them. As I have been going through some of my mom's things in this time of transition, I found this small little photo album. And my mother was, she's not the most organized person, let me put it that way. So it was tucked in between some like old magazines and catalogs and things, but it was this small little photo album. And it was of her high school boyfriend that she had had. Now, my mom graduated from high school in 1946, so this was during World War II. It was pictures and love letters from her high school boyfriend who, by all accounts, they were deeply in love. He went off to war and was gone for quite a while. And she, for reasons that I am not aware of, married someone else. And when he came back from war, she was married. And I thought about that moment, but he made enough of an impression on her that this gentleman, by his name was Fred, and Fred left enough of an impression on her that even though she chose not to marry him, he had a significant impact in her life. And he was part of her notebook, which I just loved that. I was so intrigued by that. And then I also realized that while we think about our notebooks a lot of times as the big things, right? The births and the weddings and the first loves, that our notebooks are made of so many everyday moments that are special and amazing. I went to the doctor this week. I went to the eye doctor, and I have to tell you, I went there with a lot of fear and trepidation. I woke up that morning. I didn't want to go. I felt sick to my stomach. I was just in a terrible, bad place, and I was already getting defensive. I was already planning to say, when the doctor said to me, "Well, your eye's getting worse again. Just put these eye drops in." I was just planning to say, "No, I'm not going to settle for that this time. You've got to do something better for me. You've got to do something." So I was really in a foul place when I went to the eye doctor. And I walk into the eye doctor. Now, I don't know if you've ever been to an eye doctor. So they have the doctor, and then they have the nurse, and then they have the technicians, right, that they take the pictures of your eye before you go in, and they dilate your eyes. And so I walked in, and there was this lady named Rita. I asked her name afterwards. She didn't give me her name up front. And she said, "Oh, I looked at your chart. I see that you have lupus." "I have lupus. Let me tell you what I have done for my eyes that's really made a difference." Wow. And she sat with me for like 20 minutes before she let me see the doctor. She told me the secrets of what I needed to be doing to help myself better, because she had already gone through these things and kind of suffered through them. And she just changed me. I mean, she just changed my whole day and my whole perspective. And at the end of the conversation, you know, she said, "Okay, now let me go, you know, and I'm going to go take you now to the next room where the nurses." And I just stopped her. I said, "Tell me your name." And she said, "My name's Rita." And I said, "Rita, you have made such a difference to me today. I want you to know that you, Rita, have made a huge difference. And I want to know your name because I want to be able to write down in my notebook that you really changed me." And so that one moment, had I not stopped to reflect, had I not thought gratefully about it, 10 years from now, would I remember Rita's name? You know, maybe not. Would I have stopped to just said, "This moment meant so much to me"? Maybe not. Would there be a picture of Rita in my photo album? Probably not. But gosh, just that one moment this week meant just as much to me as kind of any any major moment in my life. So there is, I want to share with you, you know, a little bit about going forward as well and where we are going forward. And as we think about our notebooks going forward, there's a Japanese philosophy and it's called Ikigai. And it is something I learned in my history. And it's many faceted. So I'm going to do my best to do it justice. But it's rooted in the sense that if you have a purpose and love, and that purpose is leading you forward, that the purpose that Spirit has given you is leading you forward, and that you are bringing these moments to others and these others are bringing moments to you, that your life will flourish and become so much different, so much better than it ever has been before. And actually, it's rooted in research, because the people that have lived longest on the planet are the people that live on Okinawa Island in Japan. And so this philosophy comes from that. And so I'm going to give you the 10 quick principles of what Ikigai is about. First is surround yourself with good friends, but also know that people come in and out of your life. So you treasure those people in the moment. You love and treasure those people in the moment. That's so important. Second is try to live life at a slower pace. Don't fall to the pressures of society, but live at a slower pace. The third one, which I don't do very well, is don't fill your stomach entirely when you eat, which I don't like that one. But anyway, four is move every day, even if you don't want to or don't feel like it. Five is be in the present. Live in the present moment. Six is smile, which I think is so critical. Seven is be active and don't retire. It may sound counterintuitive, but the people in Japan really don't retire. Instead, they do what they love. And so they don't feel like it's work and they don't have to retire from it. They keep doing it. And so even if you are retired from whatever job you are, still have your purpose and work every day at it. Sue, number eight is connect with nature. Thought you'd appreciate that. Nine is learn to be grateful. And 10, which is, again, the most important, is to follow your ikigai, or your true purpose in life going forward. Find that purpose. Wake up every morning with a purpose and don't lose that purpose. The universe taught me a very valuable lesson about my purpose over time. I thought for many, many, many years, for many reasons, that I would be I would climb the corporate ladder, I'd be a CEO, I'd have a beautiful family, and I would have a big house, and I would, I'd have all these great friends, I'd have all these trophies on my shelf. And that was what I thought that my purpose was. And now, through life, I've realized that my notebook looks very different now than it did back then, that my accomplishments to me now are very different, that giving my dog a hug and showing it love is an accomplishment. Being able to speak, because I really, truly do love to talk, is something I love. Sharing my passion of movies is my purpose. Your purpose doesn't have to be this grandiose thing. This purpose has to be you living you, you being you, you enjoying you. I want to share a final movie, which this one is a Craig movie, by the way. And I have to give a little bit of it away because it doesn't fit into the whole story I'm telling if I don't give it away. So I apologize. It's still worth seeing. The movie's called Atonement. Has anyone seen the movie Atonement? It's a British movie. So in the movie Atonement, the main protagonist of the movie, when she's young, does something pretty terrible to her sister. And it causes a really horrible rift in their family. And the movie goes on, and you see the things that happen. You see that, well, after the rift, they slowly start to meet and talk. They slowly start to get to know each other again. They meet each other's families. They go on a trip together, and they do, you know, various things happen, and they do special things. And so the movie goes on, and you think, great, she has done an amazing thing here. She's, you know, atoned for this past error. And then the big shocking twist at the end is that nothing that she's told you is true. That the rift that she created led to devastating consequences. But the book was her way of trying to make amends to the universe. And so my point in telling you this story is that, again, we have to live in the moment. We have to live in the now. We have to understand and let go of the past before things are too late. And that's the movie. I wept at the end of this movie, by the way. And I said, oh, my friend, you got to go see it. But the great thing about this movie was that I realized that in your notebook, you have to be true to you. And as your life changes, you change with it. You live with it. The person that I thought in high school would be my best friend forever, I have no idea whatever happened to them. And about, I would say, a month or 2 months ago, I got this beautiful email from someone who worked on my team 15 years ago, who's now risen to be a very successful person, who said, Craig, thank you, because you taught me some such valuable things. And this was a person that I didn't interact with every day. I didn't really know all that much about, but she said, just by the things you said, you had such an impact on me. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that each and every day we have opportunities to do things, and we may never know the impact that we have, the marvelous, amazing impact we have, but we have that. So keep your notebooks, share your stories, expand your perspectives, be willing to hear others' perspectives, live in the moments, big and small, and most importantly, no matter where you are in your life, have this purpose, this ikigai, that drives you forward, that keeps you passionate. Spirit has put you here for a reason. You are here for a reason. So no matter what it is, know that you are important, you are loved, and so is your neighbor. And so it is.